Chapter 25. Barnacle got up the department in a private secretaryship, that he might be ready for any little bit of fat that came to hand, and he fully understood the department to be a politico-diplomatic hocus-pocus piece of machinery for the assistance of the knobs in keeping off the snobs. This dashing young barnacle, in a word, was likely to become a statesman, and to make a figure. When the business is regularly before that department, whatever it is, apostrophe pursued this bright young barnacle, then you can watch it from time to time through that department. When it comes regularly before this department, then you must watch it from time to time through this department. We shall have to refer it right and left, and when we refer it anywhere, then you'll have to look it up. When it comes back to us at any time, then you had better look us up. When it sticks anywhere, you'll have to try to give it a jog. When you write to another department about it, and then to this department about it, and don't hear anything satisfactory about it, why then you had better keep on writing. Apostrophe, Arthur Clennam looked very doubtful indeed. But I am obliged to you at any rate, apostrophe said he, for your politeness. Apostrophe, not at all, apostrophe replied this engaging young barnacle. Try the thing, and see how you like it. It will be in your power to give it up at any time, if you don't like it. You had better take a lot of forms away with you. Give him a lot of forms. Apostrophe with which instruction to number 2, this sparkling young barnacle took a fresh handful of papers from numbers 1 and 3, and carried them into the sanctuary, to offer to the presiding idol of the circumlocution office. Arthur Clennam put his forms in his pocket gloomily enough, and went his way down the long stone passage and the long stone staircase. He had come to the swing doors leading into the street, and was waiting, not over patiently, for two people who were between him and them to pass out, and let him follow, when the voice of one of them struck familiarly on his ear. He looked at the speaker and recognized Mr. Meagles. Mr. Meagles was very red in the face, redder than travel could have made him, and collaring a short man who was with him, said, "Come out, you rascal, come out." Apostrophe, apostrophe, it was such an unexpected hearing, and it was also such an unexpected sight, to see Mr. Meagles burst the swing doors open, and emerge into the street with the short man, who was of an unoffending appearance, that Clennam stood still for the moment exchanging looks of surprise with the porter. He followed, however, quickly, and saw Mr. Meagles going down the street with his enemy at his side. He soon came up with his old traveling companion, and touched him on the back. The choleric face which Mr. Meagles turned upon him smoothed, when he saw who it was, and he put out his friendly hand. "How are you?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe," said Mr. Meagles. "How do you do? I have only just come over from abroad. I am glad to see you." "Apostrophe, and I am rejoiced to see you." "Apostrophe, thank ye. Thank ye." "Apostrophe, Mrs. Meagles and your daughter?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe, are as well as possible, apostrophe," said Mr. Meagles. "I only wish you had come upon me in a more prepossessing condition as to coolness." Apostrophe, though it was anything but a hot day, Mr. Meagles was in a heated state that attracted the attention of the passers-by, more particularly as he leaned his back against a railing, took off his hat and cravat, and heartily rubbed his steaming head and face, and his reddened ears and neck, without the least regard for public opinion. "Whew!" "Apostrophe, apostrophe," said Mr. Meagles, dressing again. "That's comfortable. Now I am cooler." "Apostrophe, you have been ruffled, Mr. Meagles. What is the matter?" "Apostrophe, wait a bit, and I'll tell you. Have you leisure for a turn in the park?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe, as much as you please." "Apostrophe, come along then." "Ah, you may well look at him." Apostrophe, he happened to have turned his eyes towards the offender whom Mr. Meagles had so angrily collared. "He's something to look at, that fellow is." Apostrophe, he was not much to look at, either in point of size or in point of dress, being merely a short, square, practical-looking man, whose hair had turned gray, and in whose face and forehead there were deep lines of cogitation, which looked as though they were carved in hardwood. He was dressed in decent black, a little rusty, and had the appearance of a sagacious master in some handicraft. He had a spectacle case in his hand, which he turned over and over while he was thus in question, with a certain free use of the thumb, that is never seen, but in a hand accustomed to tools. "You keep with us," apostrophe said Mr. Meagles, in a threatening kind of way, "and I'll introduce you presently. Now then." Apostrophe, Clennam wondered within himself, as they took the nearest way to the park, what this unknown, who complied in the gentlest manner, could have been doing. His appearance did not at all justify the suspicion that he had been detected in designs on Mr. Meagles' pocket handkerchief, nor had he any appearance of being quarrelsome or violent. He was a quiet, plain, steady man, made no attempt to escape, and seemed a little depressed, but neither ashamed nor repentant. If he were a criminal offender, he must surely be an incorrigible hypocrite. And if he were no offender, why should Mr. Meagles have collared him in the circumlocution office? He perceived that the man was not a difficulty in his own mind alone, but in Mr. Meagles too. For such conversation as they had together on the short way to the park was by no means well sustained, and Mr. Meagles' eye always wandered back to the man, even when he spoke of something very different. At length they being among the trees, Mr. Meagles stopped short, and said, "Mr. Clennam, will you do me the favor to look at this man? His name is Doyce, Daniel Doyce. You wouldn't suppose this man to be a notorious rascal, would you?" ... I certainly should not. ... It was really a disconcerting question, with the man there. "No, you would not. I know you would not. You wouldn't suppose him to be a public offender, would you?" ... No. ... No. But he is. He is a public offender. What has he been guilty of? Murder, manslaughter, arson, forgery, swindling, housebreaking, highway robbery, larceny, conspiracy, fraud? Which should you say now? ... I should say, returned Arthur Clennam, observing a faint smile in Daniel Doyce's face, not one of them. ... You are right, said Mr. Meagles. But he has been ingenious, and he has been trying to turn his ingenuity to his country's service. That makes him a public offender directly, sir. ... Arthur looked at the man himself, who only shook his head. "This Doyce," said Mr. Meagles, "is a smith and engineer. He is not in a large way, but he is well known as a very ingenious man. A dozen years ago, he perfects an invention involving a very curious secret process of great importance to his country and his fellow creatures. I won't say how much money it cost him, or how many years of his life he had been about it, but he brought it to perfection a dozen years ago. Wasn't it a dozen?" ... Mr. Meagles, addressing Doyce. "He is the most exasperating man in the world. He never complains." ... Yes. Rather better than 12 years ago. Rather better? ... said Mr. Meagles, "you mean rather worse. Well, Mr. Clennam, he addresses himself to the government. The moment he addresses himself to the government, he becomes a public offender." "Sir," said Mr. Meagles, in danger of making himself excessively hot again, "he ceases to be an innocent citizen, and becomes a culprit. He is treated from that instant as a man who has done some infernal action. He is a man to be shirked, put off, browbeaten, sneered at, handed over by this highly connected young or old gentleman, to that highly connected young or old gentleman, and dodged back again. He is a man with no rights in his own time, or his own property, a mere outlaw, whom it is justifiable to get rid of anyhow, a man to be worn out by all possible means." ... It was not so difficult to believe, after the morning's experience, as Mr. Meagle supposed. Don't stand there, Doyce, turning your spectacle case over and over, apostrophe cried Mr. Meagles, but tell Mr. Clennam what you confessed to me. Apostrophe, I undoubtedly was made to feel, apostrophe said the inventor, as if I had committed an offense. In dancing attendance at the various offices, I was always treated, more or less, as if it was a very bad offense. I have frequently found it necessary to reflect, for my own self-support, that I really had not done anything to bring myself into the Newgate calendar, but only wanted to effect a great saving, and a great improvement. Apostrophe, there. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Meagles. Judge whether I exaggerate. Now you'll be able to believe me, when I tell you the rest of the case. Apostrophe, with this prelude, Mr. Meagles went through the narrative, the established narrative, which has become tiresome, the matter-of-course narrative which we all know by heart. How, after interminable attendance and correspondence, after infinite impertinences, ignorances, and insults, my lords made a minute, number 3472, allowing the culprit to make certain trials of his invention at his own expense. How the trials were made in the presence of a board of six, of whom two ancient members were too blind to see it. Two other ancient members were too deaf to hear it, one other ancient member was too lame to get near it, and the final ancient member was too pig-headed to look at it. How there were more ears, more impertinences, ignorances, and insults. How my lords then made a minute, number 5103, whereby they resigned the business to the Circumlocution Office. How the Circumlocution Office, in course of time, took up the business, as if it were a brand new thing of yesterday, which had never been heard of before, muddled the business, addled the business, tossed the business in a wet blanket. How the impertinences, ignorances, and insults went through the multiplication table. How there was a reference of the invention to three barnacles and a stilt stocking, who knew nothing about it, into whose heads nothing could be hammered about it. Who got bored about it, and reported physical impossibilities about it. How the Circumlocution Office, in a minute, number 8740, saw no reason to reverse the decision at which my lords had arrived. Apostrophe how the Circumlocution Office, being reminded that my lords had arrived at no decision, shelved the business. How there had been a final interview with the head of the Circumlocution Office that very morning, and how the brazen head had spoken, and had been, upon the whole, and under all the circumstances, and looking at it from the various points of view, of opinion that one of two courses was to be pursued in respect of the business. That was to say, either to leave it alone forevermore, or to begin it all over again. Upon which, apostrophe said Mr. Meagles, as a practical man, I then and there, in that presence, took Doyce by the collar, and told him it was plain to me, that he was an infamous rascal, and treasonable disturber of the government peace, and took him away. I brought him out of the office door by the collar, that the very porter might know I was a practical man who appreciated the official estimate of such characters. And here we are. Apostrophe, apostrophe, if that airy young barnacle had been there, he would have frankly told them perhaps, that the Circumlocution Office had achieved its function. That what the barnacles had to do, was to stick onto the national ship, as long as they could. That to trim the ship, lighten the ship, clean the ship, would be to knock them off. That they could, but be knocked off once. And that if the ship went down with them, yet sticking to it, that was the ship's lookout, and not theirs. There. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Meagles, now you know all about Doyce. Except, which I own, does not improve my state of mind, that even now you don't hear him complain. Apostrophe, you must have great patience, apostrophe, said Arthur Clennam, looking at him with some wonder, great forbearance. Apostrophe, no, apostrophe, he returned, I don't know that I have more than another man. Apostrophe, by the Lord, you have more than I have, though. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mr. Meagles. Doyce smiled, as he said to Clennam, "You see, my experience of these things does not begin with myself. It has been in my way to know a little about them from time to time. Mine is not a particular case. I am not worse used than 100 others who have put themselves in the same position than all the others." I was going to say, apostrophe, I don't know that I should find that a consolation, if it were my case, but I am very glad that you do. Apostrophe, understand me. I don't say, apostrophe, he replied in his steady, planning way, and looking into the distance before him, as if his gray eye were measuring it, that it's recompense for a man's toil and hope, but it's a certain sort of relief, to know that I might have counted on this. Apostrophe, he spoke in that quiet, deliberate manner, and in that undertone, which is often observable in mechanics who consider and adjust with great nicety. It belonged to him like his suppleness of thumb, or his peculiar way of tilting up his hat at the back every now and then, as if he were contemplating some half-finished work of his hand and thinking about it. Disappointed? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he went on, as he walked between them under the trees. Yes. No doubt I am disappointed. Hurt? Yes. No doubt I am hurt. That's only natural. But what I mean when I say that people who put themselves in the same position are mostly used in the same way, apostrophe, in England, apostrophe, said Mr. Meagles. Oh, of course I mean in England. When they take their inventions into foreign countries, that's quite different. And that's the reason why so many go there. Apostrophe, Mr. Meagles, very hot indeed again. What I mean is, that however this comes to be the regular way of our government, it is its regular way. Have you ever heard of any projector or inventor who failed to find it all but inaccessible, and whom it did not discourage and ill-treat? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I cannot say that I ever have. Apostrophe, have you ever known it to be beforehand in the adoption of any useful thing? Ever known it to set an example of any useful kind? Apostrophe, I am a good deal older than my friend here, apostrophe, said Mr. Meagles, and I'll answer that. Never. Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.